AK4JBQ, KO4NUE.
JBQ.
Claire, you doing alright? Did you have a good day today?
Had a great day today. Donna was involved in church activities most of the day, including the organ concert this evening, so I had pretty much to myself. But I'm afraid I did a bunch of cleaning and reorganizing, all this stuff that needed to be done. Anyway, things were accomplished.
I was wondering if you'd help me do a little bit of troubleshooting. I am getting a lot of noise on my station. The description is, it sounds like, kind of like bacon frying or sparklers when you light a firecracker type of sparkler. And it's pretty much on every station that calls in. So today I went up to another repeater. Had a little bit of the same on another repeater. You are barely audible with me. Is that going to be something on the repeater, or is that am I safe to assume that's pretty much going to be on my station?
KI4LZI. Your station is not. It gets into this machine sometimes, and it's in 4-7, the other season had 2-meter machine. About a year ago, he had it off the air. It was so bad on it, it was unusable. It's something up there that gets into these 2-meter machines at various times, but the problem is it's intermittent, and as a result, no one can really nail down where it's at yet.
Well, Chad, I hear what you're talking about. Sorry you can hardly hear me. It's really difficult when there's a repeater between us. Narrow down troubles like this, but it's helpful to understand whether it's on your receive signal or your signal that others have received and tell you about. Which one is it?
I noticed throughout the net myself, everybody has some of it. It depends on the strength of their signal and how loud their audio is. If the signal's pretty strong and the audio's pretty strong, you hardly notice it. But if I got a weak signal and the audio's weak, and I'm talking about here on the net you just walked up, it's quite pronounced. But the 145.47 is up there, the Sky One repeater is. It got so bad on it about a year ago, they had to go to running 2 separate antennas and put the receive antenna way down low on the tire just to keep it on the air, because it was so bad on it was unusable if they hadn't have done that. Go ahead, NUE.
Andy, you have just a little bit in it. It's hardly noticeable. You know, you're not full quieting, but you're very good. And Larry, on the other hand, Larry, if you can hear me, what, I couldn't understand the last segment of what you were saying, Larry. So I'm going to assume that's not necessarily my station then. But Andy, could this have something to do with the weather change?
Before DJ Dub is in that, he's also with this repeater here, he's also the control operator. He can probably tell you about some of their deals going up there and trying to find it and haven't been able to find it. And on the other machine, the 47, K908, he's done the same thing. And they've done all kinds of things. The problem with it is it's intermittent. You know, 2 days from now it may not be in there. It's intermittent, and as long as it stays intermittent, it's almost impossible for anybody to find it. But when it does get in here, what is this? And like I say, 4-7, that they had to literally take that off the air and change antenna systems, and they even took their duplexes offline because they thought it was in it. And why they're running right now, two separate antennas. It really tears that one up, but this one here, it gets into it some as well. And I'm pretty sure that bacon frying noise we're hearing is the same thing, because I heard the same thing as you say on different signals on the net. So it's not no one person. It's something getting into the machine up there.
Well, appreciate you letting me know. But, Larry, you still in there, sir?
ACQ, I turned my power up. This is as high as it goes on this level. Is that any better?
You're audible. Barely, but you're audible. And please don't misunderstand. I'm not complaining or anything. I'm just telling you, you know, what your signal is.
Well, no, I can't hear the results of my transmission. Nobody can. So we rely on people to tell us what's what. I think it could be, and Andy's right, if it's intermittent, it's very difficult to track down. But just from the sound of it, it sounds atmospheric. As you probably know, there was a... Oh, gosh, what was it? Level 5 coronal mass ejection just a few days ago. So the solar wind that brought that will take a while to dissipate. And it affects the ionosphere. Now, we're not using the ionosphere, but the antenna on the repeater is much higher than our antennas. That's a good thing. But it also is closer by several thousand feet. It's closer to the atmospheric interference. It's just random enough. It has no pattern. The elements of it are strong and weak together. It sounds atmospheric to me, so it will go away, and it will be intermittent too. But it's just hard without some good test equipment, some good a good spectrum analyzer, perhaps, to understand what's going on. KK4, JPQ.
KI4LZI. Well, I know I heard Dave or DJW say one time when they went up there about this that one time they happened to catch it up there when it was doing it and they was up there. It was all over the 2-meter band. All over it. But you can't do nothing unless it does it and continues to do it. You know, it's too erratically intermittent. And as a result, I can't really, them or Billy's crew over there with the 4-7 can't do too much about it until it goes to doing it all the time, so. Because none of us can, no one can stay up on the mountain all the time to catch it at the right time when it's doing it, because no one knows when that'll be. Go ahead, Chad, KI4LZI.
Okay, well, I just was trying to figure out if I was thinking right as far as my troubleshooting goes, and I obviously was not, so that's okay. I'll just keep that in mind. Next time this happens, I'll start paying attention to coronal mass ejections and solar winds, and may even start a little data sheet. And just write all that down when this happens and see if there's a correlation somewhere. I would say probably so, but we'll see. We get some data together, but I'll start tracking it. But the other thing I was going to tell you was, so I got my, I've been putting me together a little kit. A little box to put my radio in, so when I go to the deer camp, I got, you know, everything in one box. Because I don't leave my logbook up there, and I don't leave my radio up there, because, you know, I'm not there to watch it. I don't leave, you know, call signs laying around either. I bring all that back home with me when I leave. But I got my little kit together, and the radio I bought from AK's estate. Just gonna let you know, I got his call sign stenciled on the top of the radio, and. That looks really nice. It really does. So I got my radio and got me a in-fed half wave. Already got an antenna up there, but I'm thinking I may put another one up. And got me a little 12 volt tuner. And that way, when I, you know, walk in up there at the cabin, I can just put me some power pole connectors on the end of everything, and I can just hop right into my supply there and be up and running in, you know, a few minutes. But just gonna let you know, I got my little kit together, and I'm kind of liking how it looks. KL4NUE.
KK4JPQ. I don't think I mentioned that your signal is quite strong. Sorry, mine's so weak, but I'm not surprised. Well, it's good that you're getting a lot of people call things like that a go box. Just pick it up and go. Everything's in it. I don't know what you're using for a box. A lot of folks use those inexpensive boxes that have foam inserts in them that you can get from Harbor Freight. They lock up nice. They're pretty lightweight because they're constructed of a really dense plastic. Then it's kind of a knockoff of a Gator box, is that right? Anyway, it's in Harbor Freight, you can spend $40 for it, and if you get the original box in several colors, I might add, but you pay a real premium. It's like $120. So, hams are noted for having a good eye for a deal. So, that would be good. It's sort of like it's small, like an overnight case, if you know what I mean. And you chose some kind of box to put it in.
Knockoff Pelican case. And I got it at Harbor Freight, and it's sand colored. So yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. But I managed to get everything, you know, crammed in there without, you know, putting any stress on my knobs and buttons and all that. But I'm tickled with it. I like the way it turned out. But not to change the subject, I want to ask Andy a question too. Andy, have you been able to hear anything on the tracking collars as of yet? KO4NUE, KI4LZI, and KK4JBQ.
4LZI negative. As you said, they'll have to be looking at me probably for me to hear those with no more power than that, but not this week, but last week, they were all around up here, running around up here hunting, though, on the marine freights. You could have been listening about any of those Simplex marine freights up in this way and heard them all around here.
Well, Andy, just be advised that now that tone that those things emit, it's not like CW, but it's similar. And that has a tendency to. Well, I guess that would be the right way to describe it. Because of the type of tone it is, it's able to move a little further because there's no modulation that's or variable in the voice. It's just a steady tone. So it's pretty predictable and it's pretty pronounced. I think when we ran them, 5 to 7 miles, I think. I can't remember. I wrote all that down a couple weeks ago. But being in mountains now, that's gonna be a little totally different ball game. But I don't think they'd have to be right on top of you if they're on the same side of mountain you are. But keep trying. I mean, I'm interested to know if you can hear anything.
Well, see, if it's only doing a half a watt, they have to be right here in the yard pretty much before I'll hear that. Being how 2 meter VHF would be just a rubber duck on a half a watt, they'd have to be right here. So, as you said, the chances of me hearing it's not very promising, for sure. One thing about it, they keep the marine frequencies hopping, though, for sure. Running all over here doing this, trying to find this dog, trying to do this, do that. That's why I'm telling you. I don't know that any of them hunt out your way over there toward Liberty, but I wouldn't rule it out. And every now and then, I would listen around on some of those marine simplex frequencies just to be sure.
There's a guy I've never met him. I don't know who he is even. Not too far from me, where the deer camp is. And he has got a couple of hounds that he coon hunts with. And I'm going to tell you what, when he, one of them, I don't know what it is, what type of dog it is, but he sounds like a pretty big male, but I'm going to tell you what, now that is just music to my ears. When I'll crack that window open, I was up there the other night, spent the night up there the other night, a couple nights ago, and it was about an hour, half an hour before the sun went down, and I could hear the dogs. Oh boy, they were stationary, which meant they probably were on the chain or in the kennel or whatnot. And they were begging to go, just, you know, would not be quiet. And then, I don't know, probably two and a half hours after the sun went down, I picked them up, I don't know, about a half a mile, maybe a mile, 180 degrees off azimuth, which means he moved them. He was actually hunting down there off, I think it's Gilstrap. And boy, they were just, I mean, you could tell they were doing what they wanted to do. And their pitch changed, their voice changed, and they were dead after it. And I just closed that window on the north side and went over there and opened the window on the south side. And, oh, man, I listened to them for, I don't know, hours, you know, that and the radio. And every now and then I'd turn the radio down and figured out if they'd moved anything or not. But they were moving pretty good. But they sure did sound good. That sounded so good, it just tickled me to death here, that.
Well, see, over the years, I've heard them all around here. And when I'm not transmitting like I am now here on this 8900 on a amateur HT, like when I was listening to y'all in here late last night, I didn't get in, I didn't have much to say, but I was listening to y'all last night. I have the scanner on the ham band, on the amateur analog ham band, and I have it scanning those marine frequencies as well, I do. And sometimes, not necessarily last night when I was hearing y'all on here, but sometimes when I have just that on, I'll pick up on something that's not amateur, and then I look at freaks and I see it's on the marine frequencies, and I know there's some of them around here operating on Simplex somewhere around here. Go ahead, Larry. KI4LZI.
Well, I'll just sit back and listen, but I can't add much to your conversation. But in the meantime, I was looking up a site that I might recommend to you, Chad, if you'd like to learn a little bit more about space weather and about how the sun affects us and the storms on the sun. There are going to be more of this going on because we're entering a new solar cycle. And you probably have heard all about the 11-year cycle that the sun has. We're coming out of, you got licensed about the lowest point of the sun's activity, and it's starting up again. And so that's a good thing. It energizes the ionosphere, and that's what we rely on for distant communication. The ionosphere acts as a... The word is not reflector, it's refractor. So it's a slight difference in the two. Anyway, the site that you might want to visit is called Space Weather Woman. Yeah. The gal that operates it is a PhD. She's also a ham, so you get it from that perspective. But she knows a great deal about astronomy and astrophysics. I think that's where she got a PhD. And she presents all these pretty dry facts in an entertaining way. You will not be bored. Great graphics. She has a website. You just do a Google search on Space Weather Woman. You click on the first result. Anyhow, I'll turn it back over to you, AK4JBQ.
Okay, well, I'll check her out and see, you know, what the deal is, because there's a couple websites I use. I think some of them, and it's a little bit confusing. There's a whole lot of numbers up there. I know, you know, one set of numbers I need to look at. As far as propagation goes. But, the rest of the numbers are just kind of confusing. And I think some of the problem, too, is I'm using 3 or 4 different websites to kind of track the same information. And all the numbers are in different spots. So I need to start using the same web page. But, so I keep track of my numbers, I guess. But I'll definitely check her out and see what the deal is. Maybe she can help me learn a little bit more about what all those numbers mean. But there's one website that I use occasionally that has, I don't know where he's getting this information. He may be getting it himself, but there's actual pictures of the ejections coming off of the surface of the sun. And he's got 10 or 12 different types of pictures, you know. And I was reading, I don't know, it was last month or a couple of weeks ago or something. I was reading the information that he had up there, and one of those ejections coming out of the sun was, you know, it didn't look that big to me. Well, it was comparatively, when you compared it to all the other ejections, it was the biggest one. But when you start reading the information down at the bottom, that thing was shooting out into space. I want to say it was 150,000 miles. No, that can't be right. 100, I don't know, I can't remember. It was on out there. Maybe it was that. I can't remember the numbers, but I remember looking at the numbers and thinking, my gosh, that little old thing is out there that far. But I suspect there's probably a whole lot of some type of spectrum that comes with that. And I'm sure it's going to be electromagnetic somehow. But I love space. Anything to do with space, especially pictures and astronomy, I just, you know, I just like looking at those pictures, especially from the, you know, the Hubble, even though I think Hubble's out of date now, but I love looking at those pictures and just wondering, you know, just wondering what's out there sometimes. KO4NUE. Go ahead, somebody pick it up.
KI4LCI. Another place you could get information, but there again, you gotta be able to get WWV signal real good. All the WWV broadcasts on 18 minutes past the hour, they give a propagation report on WWV at 18 minutes past the hour. But you have to see which one of them you can get the best. You know, there's 2.5, 5, 10, 15, 20 megahertz. They use all those signals on HF to transmit them. But at 18 minutes past the hour is when they give the propagation report. And I have heard at times when they talk about what it could be on HF radio blackout. So take and use your HF when you get a good HF antenna up. Find whichever one comes in the best. Because I've just barely got anything here right now just to receive on. And usually, most of my gettings is on 5 megahertz, usually. KI4LZI.
Sir, I got it. Today, I spent all day in the house in the ham shack, kind of straightening up a little bit and making some repairs to a couple of pieces of electronic gear, doing a little bit of soldering and things like that. So I decided that I would go out and inspect my antenna, as I haven't looked at it lately. And went out there and was looking around it and so on and so forth. And I know there's a lot of variables involved in this. I'm admitting that off the bat. But I've got certain frequencies on 80 meters already programmed in my radio because I'm not ready to move to the next band yet. I'm still learning with 80 meters. So anyway, I went out there and I changed the center point height of my dipole that I built. It's been a flat top until today, and I moved it up probably, I don't know, 6 or 8 feet. And the guys I normally talk to on 80 meters, I pretty much know how far and where I can get on an average. And today, moving the thing up 6 or 8 feet, I was hardly ever get anybody up in Pennsylvania, New Jersey area. Typically, the farthest I can get is probably West Virginia on 80 meters. But I moved that thing up 6 or 8 feet and just came here to check things out, see, you know, how much that affected my SWR. And just, you know, was listening in and put a call out, and I mean, just that little bit of difference. I was all the way up into New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New York today. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So now that's got me wondering, you know, what's going to happen if I can get the ends of my antenna up a little higher, or maybe I need to drop them and go inverted. I don't know. There's so many variables with this with this antenna. You know, Larry and Andy, for something that has no moving parts and is basically just a piece of wire and something that its construction is so simple, that is the most complicated thing. You know, you make one little change to it and it's a know. It is crazy. Just this whole antenna thing is, I don't think I'm going to ever stop learning how that thing works. KO4NUE.
Larry, KI4LC.
Looking at a calculator I have on my phone for 80 meter antennas. It isn't anything that I'll ever accomplish. I don't have anything. There are no trees available to me higher than about 20 feet. I live in a subdivision, and you know, if you've seen one, and I know everybody has, before they put houses on it, they tear everything off the top of the soil. Trees are gone, grass is gone, brush is gone. They recontour, they change the contour of the land to suit everything, and they cut the streets, and then they put in the underground utilities and whatever, and build houses on it. And what you have after that is they'll plant trees, but they'll be saplings. You know, when we moved in here 22 years ago, the tree was no more than about 18 feet, and now it's up over 30 feet. But that's in the front yard. I can't have an antenna that attaches to the tree in the front yard. No. Anyway, I was looking at my calculator, and it varies. The length of the legs varies. If you have the center point higher, it's some fashion of inverted V when you do that. You're playing with a lot of trigonometry there, Chad. AK4JPQ.
Let me make sure I got this. You're exactly right. I mean, it amazes me how many variables are involved in this. You got the impedance, you got the standing wave, you got the inductance, the capacitance, how high it is compared to, you know, the length of it, and is it an inverted V configuration, is it a flat top configuration. Coincidentally, I've learned two new things. One thing that is factual. One is still in the, I'm not sure I've made a contact yet. I mean, not a contact, but a connection. And the first thing is that I was looking on the internet today about reading about dipoles and configuration that's best for, you know, and ran across a calculator that basically does the math for you, which is not a lot of math involved in it, but you just put in, you know, the type of material and the velocity factor and all that, and the calculator that I was using, if the dipole is going to be configured as an inverted V, then the length of the antenna compared to the frequency you're going to use is different than if you're going to use a flat top configuration, according to the calculator. Which begs the question, either he is wrong, or he's right. What are the two? I just haven't had time to think through all of that. Not sure why the length would would be different, or why you would migrate off of that, what is it, 468 divided by the frequency gives you the length. But at any rate, I thought that was kind of interesting. And the other thing that I noticed today when I moved my antenna that I think I've made another connection with is that when I put the antenna up, I keep a log in the station. Anytime I make a change to something, and I know that might sound crazy to some people, but if I make a change to the antenna, I write that down. There, you know, may be a time when I need it, or, you know, if I want to try to start collecting data. I don't know. That's kind of important to me to know when I made a change and what change I made, so that I can understand, you know, what's happening at the radio. Some people may think that's crazy, but that's just the way I do, I guess. But at any rate, I noticed today that when I changed the height of the center point, I checked my SWR again and checked my impedance just to, you know, check everything out with the analyzer. And I think I'm starting to put a little connection together that the closer I get to 1-to-1 on the ratio, the closer my impedance gets to 50 ohms. So, and I'm off a little bit on the impedance. But is that a correct statement, or is this just a fluke coincidence or something? KO4 NUE.
Center line from the C point straight down and measure the angle
to the leg. It should be no greater than 45 degrees. Add those both legs together so your arc between the two legs should be no greater than 90 degrees. You're backing up if it's greater. And it should be less than, I'll say, 20 degrees on both sides, which would be a 40-degree arc between the two legs. But it is a little bit, it's not difficult, and this application that I have is very good with this. It has sliders to indicate all these angles are, and you can just cite this and make an estimate, of course. But if you have one end of it higher off the ground than the other end, if you have one angle different than the other, predictable results. The app that I have is, what is it called? Just a second. It's called Ham, Ant, Cow. That's just abbreviated. HAMANTCAL. Ham Antenna Calculator stands for, of course. But it's quite good. I use it a lot. And you can get a feel for the changes that you can make and the results of that the changes will make in your signal.
KK4JPQ. 4LZI. Like tonight, I was listening on the sideband net here. Our time change here can affect things too on propagation. About everybody on the sideband net tonight couldn't hear one another except from people up in Pennsylvania or part of the state. Massachusetts and things like that, just because we went from being where we was before. We was at 8 o'clock, but tonight at 7 o'clock was 8 o'clock, and the propagation was long, too, and kind of had it where most people couldn't hear the net control and the sideband net tonight. So, time, as we all know, time involved with this, the time of day, plays a lot of havoc with things, too. You two go ahead and carry on, because I'm going to go back in there here in just a bit and take my answer, and if y'all still here, I'll come back then. KI4LZI.
I don't think I'm going to hang around late as I did last night. I'm going to close it off here in a few minutes, but or here in a little bit, but nice talking to you, Andy. 7-3s to you. Make sure I got it. Larry, when I put the antenna up, this is what I did. I'm going to try to describe this. So, at 100 feet apart, let's deal with one end of the antenna, not the, it started at the center point and moved to the left. So,70 feet from the center point to the left, I found two trees that are 10 feet apart, because I planted the trees 16 years ago so I could harvest them for when it was time for the kids to have college education, and that's how we were going to pay for their education, was to harvest the trees. So I know they're 10 feet apart. So I've tied a piece of guy wire rope from tree to tree. And the guy wire rope has got three pulleys on it. about 2 feet apart. And running through those pulleys are three different pieces of paracord. Now go to the center point and move right. 70 feet to the right is the identical. So what that, and the reason I did that, and they're both 45 feet high, give or take a couple of inches. And what that allows me to do is if I want to build a different antenna or I want to test a different antenna, I've got a way to tie off my ends and raise them up and down. That way if I need to make repairs to the antenna or if I want to put another antenna up or if I want to do testing on a new antenna, it's easy to do that because I can just tie my endpoints off and raise them up with the pulleys to do, you know, my testing or set a new antenna or whatever. And it took me some time to do that, but I can save time when, you know, if I build another antenna to do the testing. So it's pretty simple for me to make changes to the antenna ends. I just, you know, go down there and basically pull a string and it runs through a pulley and I can raise or lower my feed points. I mean, not my feed point. It's on a string too, but my end points. So that's the way I've got that set up. And that makes things pretty simple. I know that sounds maybe complicated, but I just figured it would save me some time. You know, if I want to... Well, let me put it this way. The way it's built, maybe I should have said it this way. The way it's built, if I build a completely different dipole, I probably can have it up and running and after it's built now. Probably less than 10 minutes. Because I just tie my strings off on the ends and then just pull it up to 45 feet. And if that makes sense to you, KO4NUE, KK4JBQ.
It's all considered the same band, really.
it's a very wide band. You really can't get. If you want to work the bottom of 80 meters or 75, if you want to work the top, you need two antennas. One will not, you'll never be able to capture all that bandwidth with one antenna. I think it sounds like to me that you're interested in the phone portion, between 3.8 and 4.0, KK4JBQ.